Or I could also say good morning. Our daf this morning is Mem Zayin 47. We are picking up on Mem Bava Mem Beis 46b, the Mishnah. Hamokres atzmo v'hasban of the Obdei Kochavim. If a person goes ahead and sells himself and his children to non-Jews. Now, we'll say this would be a case of where a person owes money, so he doesn't have the money to pay the debts. He has a good cheshbon. What's the cheshbon? I'll sell myself into servitude, right? And I'll go ahead and work off the debt. And then what happens? He comes to the community. He says, "Nu, redeem me. Redeem me because look at me. I've been sold to a Gentile. So what's the halacha? Ein podin oso. We do not redeem him." We'll qualify this ruling in just a little bit. We do not redeem him, says the Gemara. But what we will do is, after the father who sold the family into servitude dies, we will go ahead and redeem the children. Says the Gemara, because we will say that the logic behind that seems to be is that the children didn't do anything. Right? The children aren't responsible for the decisions of their father. Therefore, the father got them into this mess. We're not getting them out of it, but we will redeem the children. Says the Gemara, Amar Avasi. So we'll say this. So Rav Ashi comes along and qualifies the ruling and says, this is a situation where a guy is a habitual offender, meaning he always does this. He gets himself into financial trouble. He goes ahead and he sells himself off to the Gentile, and then he comes to the community to ask him to redeem himself. So if he's done this already two or three times, then ultimately, again, we are not going to go ahead and redeem him. But if he's a first-time offender, he got himself into trouble, you know, sometimes people get themselves into trouble, and they think they know a good solution, and it looks good when they're trying it, and then they do it, and what? They realize, hey, this is not such a good idea, so then we'll redeem him. But if he's a habitual offender, then we're not going to redeem him. So the Gemara tells a couple of stories. Hanei b'nei machsi, diyas yizuzim yodov kachavim, So there were these people from Bei Michsi. Bei Michsi is a place. The Jewish are from Bei Michsi. So the father used to constantly borrow money from Gentiles. He didn't have money to repay. And therefore, what happened? They came along and they took the family, as servants in payment for the debt. So the father came to Rafuna, Amr lehu, Mai Avid lehu. So Rafuna said, "What he wants from me?" Because the Mishnah says, "Disnana mocheres atzmo v'esban avla ovdei kochavim ein podin oso." So we'll say again. So Rafuna said, "What am I supposed to do?" The Mishnah says that if someone sold themselves to ovdei kochavim, then what? Then Lamai said again, "You can't redeem them." But we'll say, by the way, just so you understand, this is the continuation of the previous Mishnah. What's the logic over here? The theme over here is that we can't put the community in a situation where we are at the potential for always breaking the communal coffers. You can't do that. So meaning, if we constantly redeem every single guy who sells himself into servitude to a Gentile, you know what happens? You incentivize irresponsible behavior. Because then what it means is, I can borrow as much money as I want, even though I can't repay it. I'll go ahead, and what's the worst case scenario? The creditor will take me, and maybe even my family as slaves. It's no problem, because what's going to happen? The community is going to bail me out. Community is going to bail me out. But we'll say, so society cannot exist. We'll say, this is actually very contemporarily relevant. Society cannot exist when individuals can think that they can make irresponsible choices, and the society, whether it's the government or whether it's the Jewish community, will come along and bail me out. That is the worst possible setup. We're living with a lot of that setup societally. You can't live like that because you will break communal coffers. That's the idea of the Mishnah. So this guy comes to Ravuna. Ravuna says, "I'm sorry, I can't help you." The Mishnah says that if someone does this, we don't redeem him. Amaluhu Rabbi Abba. So Rabbi Abba was there and he said, "L'maratani Rabbeinu, l'maratani Rabbeinu, v'husha machra v'shana v'shileish." So Rabbi Abba came along and said, "Rabbi, this is only if a person is a habitual offender. V'pashtos, this is this guy's first time offense, which means we should redeem him." So which the Gemara says, "Amarle hani margil regili da'avdi hachi." To which Rabbi Asi responded, no, this guy's been here before. Meaning he does this habitually, he is a habitual offender, and therefore I'm sorry, but we can't go ahead and redeem him. Hahu gavar dezabin nafshe leludoi. Rabbi said, it was an individual who sold himself to the ludoim. Rabbi said, Rashi says over here, ludoi, uma sha'ochlim b'nei adam. Cannibals. Not a good people to sell yourself to. So he sold himself to, when we say he sold himself, what that means is one of two things. Either he borrowed money, defaulted, and was taken as payment, or literally again, he actually sold himself. He sold himself to them, got the money, and gave it to whatever, his family, or used it for himself. So he came before Rabbi Ami and said, Rabbi, you have to redeem me. Now, I both say, now, obviously, in this case, the request is a little bit more acute. Why? Because if redemption does not occur, then what? Then Lamais again, he's dead. So Amar Le Tnan, Hamocher Atzmo Vesmanav Olvi Kochavim, Ein Poldin Oso, Ava Poldin Es Habanim. So I both say, so the guy, the way this Gemara seems to be read is that the guy is making his case. He's making his case ultimately again to Rabbi Ami. He's saying, Rabbi, look, I know the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that if someone sells themselves and his children to Ovdei Kochavim, we don't redeem them. But when the father dies, we do go ahead and redeem the children. Why, Rabbi Osai? Because we are concerned that if the children are living with the Ovdei Kochavim, with now the father's dead, there's no one there to blunt the Gentile influence, that what's going to happen? The children are going to be influenced, and Nebuch, they're going to go off the derech, and they're going to be totally, they're going to abandon their Judaism. So we redeem them in order to save them. So the guy says, V'koshikin hacha di'ika kitala. So the guy makes the case to Rabbi Ami, Rabbi, you certainly should redeem me over here, because you don't have to be choshish by going off the derech. They're going to kill me. So this would certainly be a reason to redeem me. Amrli Rabban Rabbi Ami, ha Yisrael mumuher. So the rabbi said to Rabbi Ami, we don't have any obligation to redeem this individual. He is a Yisrael Mumar. He's a Yisrael Mumar. As well say, he's an apostate. He's left Judaism. He's actively abandoned Judaism. And therefore, again, I both say, he has no obligation for us to spend communal funds on him. To which the Gemara said, Amaluhu, Ema Leteavunhu Dekaachil. Rabbi Ami said, well, listen, maybe the guy is what's called a mumar l'te'avon. Or we'll say, a mumar l'te'avon means someone who transgresses, but he doesn't transgress as a form of rebellion against God. Rather, he transgresses, why? Right? Because he enjoys it. Right? Because he gets pleasure from it. So we'll say, there's a real big distinction there. Someone is a mumar l'te'avon, is there, of course, a sinner, but at least, again, it's not a rebellious sinner, versus a mumar l'hachis, which is what we call a mumar or a min. That's someone who sins with the intention to rebel. So Rabbi Ami says, I know the guy's a sinner, but maybe he's a mumar l'te'avon. To which they said, Amar lehu, they said, Rabbi, I'm sorry. They said to him, V'hazinim de'ika etere v'yisura kameh, v'shavik etere v'achal yisura. They said, Rabbi, I'm sorry. It's wonderful to bring down the kaf schus, but it's not the case, because there are many times when there's kosher meat and non-kosher meat, both readily available to him, and he willingly and knowingly takes the non-kosher meat over the kosher meat. Now, the only reason someone does that is as an act of rebellion against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So such a person is considered to be a mumar lahachis, a min. Now, the halacha is that once a person enters that category, they leave the category of achicha, of your brother. Once they leave the category of achicha, then by definition, many of the halachos that apply to other members of Klal Yisrael will not apply to this particular individual. Amar lei zil lo kashavik lei da'afar kincha. To which Rabbi Ami finally has to respond to this individual saying, I'm sorry, you have to leave. The rabbis are not letting me redeem you. In other words, I have no recourse to help you out. I'm very sorry for whatever happens. Reish Lakish Zabin Naf She Leludoi. Suppose Reish Lakish went ahead and, that this is actually very interesting, Reish Lakish sold himself to the Ludoi. Now, must remember that the cannibals. So we're going to see Reish Lakish has a plan to wipe out the Ludoim. So he sells himself to the Ludoim. Watch this. Shakal Ba'adei Chaisa V'Galgalta. He took with him a little bag, and inside of the bag was a large stone. Rashi says either a ball of stone or a ball of lead. But there was a hard object inside the bag. Okay. Amar, so what was Reish Lakish's plan? Listen to this plan. Gemiri di Yom Abasra, called the Boy Minayo Avdulay. So the Ludoim have an interesting practice, which is what they're both saying, that on the last day, right before they cook up a person, they give him his last wish. Right, whatever you want, we'll give you. Why do they do this? Kihechi delechol adame. So we'll say, so the Ludoim think that what's going to happen if they give a person his last wish, he's going to be mochel. Right? I'm ochel. Ah, you're killing me, but you gave me a great steak dinner. I'm ochel. Right? So this is actually interesting. The Marsha points out that they actually thought that if somebody went to his death a little bit more appeased, that the blood was sweeter. The blood was sweeter. Okay, in any event, they had this practice where the mice, again, the last day of life, they gave the intended party to be cooked his last will and testament. Yom HaBasra, Amrulei Ma'anei say they're right about to cook up Reish Lakish. And they say, what do you want? Amrulei, he says, I have a simple request. Ba'ina, I almost say this sounds, Ba'ina, Akmetinchu Va'osa Vinchu, V'cholchad Minaychu Amche Chaisu Palga. Here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to tie you up, I'd like to sit you down, tie you up, and I'd like to hit each of you 1.5 times. Okay. So I'll say, so Kamatinu Va'osvinhu, Kolchad Minaihu. So I'll say, so they listened, which is just fascinating. So they listened, and what happens? Kad Mechaye Chad Chaisa Nafik Nishmase. Reish Lakish was a strong man, and when he delivered the first punch to each of them, he mamish Nafak Nishmase doesn't mean he killed them. Nafik Nishmase means he like knocked the wind out of them. Charkine Lishine. So the Ludun started, grinding their teeth at him, like snarling at him, like, okay, very nice, you got a good punch, but we're right about to cook you. So Amarle Achuche Kamechaiches, the Reish Lakish said, you're laughing at me. So Akati Pash Lecha Gabi, Palgo de Chaisa. I still have half a punch left. Remember again, he said, I get 1.5 hits. I still have one punch left. Katlinhu kulu nafak va'asa. So we'll say, so what happened? At that point in time, after the punch, he took out his bag that had the lead ball, the stone ball in it, and he hit each of them and killed each of them, killed the Ludun. So we'll say, this is the story of how Reish Lakish wiped out the cannibalistic Ludoim. Now take a look at Tosos, just a moment, we'll say. Reish Lakish Zabin Nashi Ludoi. Rashi says, Tosos says, Kodem Shechazar Lemutov. So this is amazing. Remember, Reish Lakish has a very interesting story. Reish Lakish was about tshuva. Reish Lakish spent the early part of his life, not just like a little bit off the derech. Reish Lakish was the head bandit, right? Reish Lakish was one bad dude, as they say, right? So what did he do? So Tosa just points out, by the way, this is before he was chozer b'tshuva, right? This is before he became a rav. So in his youth, he decided. Zachary, what do you think about this story? This is pretty serious stuff, right? Don't try this. So what happens? So he went ahead. This is before he became a Baal Tshuva, and this is when he was young. He went ahead and he did this. Tosa says, because Lohaya Mezalzal Ba'asa Kolkach. This is actually very interesting, because Tosa says, once he became a great Talmud Chacham, so a Torah scholar, it's interesting. It's interesting halach in general that a Torah scholar is not permitted to be mezalzel in his kavod. So he could be mochav on certain things, but there are certain things he's not allowed to do because his honor is not his. His honor is the honor of Torah. So Tosa just pointing out, Reish Lakish almost would not have been permitted to engage in such a practice like this when he was already the Reish Lakish. Therefore, this episode took place in his youth. Just interesting. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, yes, so once it's about Reish Lakish, the Gemara just tells about Reish Lakish in his latter years. Yosef ka'achal v'shasi. So we'll say Reish Lakish had very little money, and Reish Lakish had an interesting approach to money, which is that he spent what he had. Again, he wasn't recklessly or not needlessly, because he had very little to begin with, but what he had, he would use to eat, he would use to drink, he didn't save. So listen to this. Yosef ka'achal v'shasi. Amrli barte, v'lo bo'es midi l'mizgale. Father, do you not want to save a little bit of money to purchase a mattress to sleep on? In other words, like, Himamish had nothing, and yet he was spending his money on good food and drink. Amrle, biti krisi kari. Said, my daughter, my stomach is my mattress. In other words, so I fill up my stomach understanding that I'm not going to have money for the mattress, but it's okay. So, kinach nafshe shava kava demurika. So we'll say, when he passed away, all Reish Lakish left behind was a kav of saffron, Morika saffron. Kari anafshe, he used to say about himself, what he used to say is people spend their lives trying to amass a fortune that they leave to others. So Reish Lakish says, the Pasuk says about them, v'ozvu la'achirim chelam. They leave their fortune for someone else. It's actually a very profound Gemara. What Reish Lakish was trying to say is something fascinating. People spend their lives trying to go ahead and amass money to leave to someone else. And the amazing part is what? that when you die, you have absolutely no control over how that money is actually used. Now that we'll say about Reish Lakish, was wise enough to know that sometimes that money that parents try to leave for their children sometimes becomes the greatest source of tension and discord within families afterwards. So again, Reish Lakish had his own shita. And Reish Lakish's shita was, you know what? I might as well enjoy it in moderation. And the truth is, the same way I blazed my trail in this world, my children will have to do the same. So the Gemara is not necessarily advocating for this particular approach, but it was Reish Lakish's approach. Says the Mishnah. So we'll say another amazing Tikkun HaOlam Mishnah. Someone who sells his field to a non-Jew. Listen to this one. So get ready for this. You sell your field to a non-Jew. What's the halacha? Even though I sold the field, I have to buy back the Bikurim. Remember, Bikurim is each and every year the first fruits. So each and every year I have to buy back the Bikurim from the Gentile in order to bring them to Yerushalayim. Maybe Mimenu Bikurim. Why? Mipnei Tikkun HaOlam. Ultimately, again, for the benefit of society. Rashi points out over here, Mipnei Tikkun HaOlam, Shelo Yehi Rogya Limkar Karka Baritzola Ovei Kochavim. So what's the Tikkun HaOlam over here? The rabbis are trying to dissuade Jewish sale of land to Gentiles. You can't, if you're a Jew, we shouldn't sell property to Gentiles in Eretz Yisrael. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabba, Af Api Shenkin Lovik Chavim Eretz Yisrael, Af Kiyami De Meiser, Shene Emar Kili Kala Aretz, Aval Yish Kinyin Lovik Chavim Eretz Yisrael, Lachbar Ba, Boros Sichin Umar. So we'll say, Rabba says, even though a non-Jew doesn't acquire title to land in Eretz Yisrael to take away the Kiddusha of land. In other words, we'll say Rabba Shita is that even if a non-Jew owns land in Eretz Yisrael, that land still retains its Kiddusha. So Gentile ownership does not remove land from its obligation in Trumos and Maisos, but Gentile ownership does give the non-Jew the right to what? To actually work the land. So if he wants to dig a pit or he wants to dig a cistern, he has the right to do that. Shene Emar, because the Pasuk says, Hashamayim Shamayim LaHashem V'haaretz Nasan Livnei Adam. Because the heavens belong to God, but the earth belongs to man. So when the Gentile purchases land, even in Eretz Yisrael, he can't take away the Kiddusha of the land. Why? Because the Pasuk says, Ki li haaretz, the holiness of the land belongs to God, and Gentile ownership cannot take that away, but he does have ownership to actually do stuff with the land itself. The Rebbe Lozer, Amar Rebbe Lozer says, Afa pi sheish kin la ovid kocham beretz Yisrael af kia bide meiser. Rebbe Lozer, on the other hand, says that even though when a non-Jew owns property, he does go ahead and remove the kiddush of the land. So when Gentile owns property, that produce of that property is not subject to Trumos and Maisros. Shene emar, because the Pasuk says, Digoncha, for lo dagan ovid kocham. The Pasuk said, it is only your grain that is subject to Trumos and Maisros, but not the grain of a Gentile. Aval in kinyin lo ovid kocham beretzor lachpar ba boros sichin uma oros. Most of this is a fascinating sheet. Rabbi Lazar holds that a Gentile does not have the right to work the land, to start digging stuff up. Why not? Shneemar LaHashem HaAretz. Because he holds that the Pasuk says that the land itself, the goof of the land, belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what are Rabbi and Rabbi Lazar arguing about? Mar Savar Digancha V'lo Digan Ovid Kochavim. So one opinion says that the Pasuk tells me that it's only digancha, your grain, Jewish grain, that is subject to the laws of Trumos and Maisros, and not the grain of a Gentile. Umar Savar, diguncha, velo digun ovei kochavim. I will say, so remember, the lashon of digun, so digun refers ultimately again to when the grain itself is finished. It is only your finished grain, and not the finished grain of a Gentile that is subject to Trumos and Maisros. I will say, now what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Digun chavlo, digun shal oved kochavim. Shemirchan oved kochavim mein shalo. Bishas mirach shu gemar melacht on the meiser. Mirach oved kochavim potron. So we'll say, so the other man Damer says, it's only if the Gentile owns the grain at the end of the processing process. That makes sense. Then in the processing, that the grain itself is exempt. But Gentile ownership of land will not, by definition, exempt will not by definition exempt the produce from Trumos and Maestros. It's only if the Gentile owns it at the end of what we call the, when it's digun, the miruach, the piling of the grain, then it's exempt. So we'll say, their fundamental machlokes is there Gentile ownership over land in Eretz Yisrael to go ahead and remove the kiddusha of the land? And the nafkamin, this is not an academic question, this is a fundamental question because it has an impact on tithing. So if a Gentile owns land, is that land subject to Trumos and Maestros at all? So Rabbi says, no. Rabbi says, Gentile ownership of a land does not take away the obligation of Shumos and Maestros. Rabbi Lazar says, it does. So I'm a rabbi. Rabbi says, Minah min Allah, where do I know my opinion from? Where am I opinion from? Disnan, haleket v'ashichacha v'apeh sha'ovdei sha'ovdei kochavim, chayavim b'maiser. Because let's remember, what did the Mishnah say? That the leket shichacha and peh, remember, again, leket is if you're collecting your stalks and you drop a few stalks, you have to leave them for the poor. Shichacha is if you're collecting your bundles and you leave a bundle or two, you have to leave them for the poor. And peah, of course, is the corner of the field that you have to leave for the poor. So leket shichacha and peah, sha'ovdei kochavim, chayavim b'maiser, ela imkein hifkir. So we'll say, if you have leket shichacha and peah of a Gentile, it is obligated in Meister, unless, of course, what? Unless, of course, you make it Hefker. So, hey, Chidami, what's the case? See, if you say the Leket Shecha and Peah is owned by a Jew, and a Gentile is collecting it, so the Gemara says, Ela Imkein Hefker, then what does it mean if it says if he makes it Hefker? Ha Mathkari V'kaimi. Obviously, we'll say, if it's Leket Shecha and Peah that belongs to a Jew, it's already what? It's already inherently Hefker. Rather, it must be that leket shechacha and peah belong to the Gentile. Belaktinu Yisrael. And what's the case? The case is where the Jew is collecting it from the Gentile. Time of the hefker. The reason it will be exempt in Shumos and Maestros is why? Because the Gentile made it hefker. Halo hefker chayiv. But what do you see from here? We'll say that's what? That if the Gentile does not go ahead and make it hefker, then what? Then it's chayiv. Then it's chayiv. So we'll say, to which he tells us that what? That Gentile ownership of land in Eretz Yisrael does not remove the obligation for Trumos and Maestros. To which the Gemara says, lo, the olam di Yisrael, the case is where the field belongs to Yisrael. I should say, the leket shecha and peah belong to Yisrael. V'laktinu ovid kochavim, a Gentile is coming to collect it. Udika amrit hamifkari v'kaimi, and that which you said before, that if it belongs to a Jew, the leket shecha and peah of a Jew is already hefker. So I understand that the Jewish owner of the land made it hefker for Yisrael. But did he go ahead and make it hefker ultimately again for an Ovid Kochavim? So which the Gemara says, Tashma, Yisrael shalakach sodame Ovid Kochavim, if a Jew purchased a field from a non-Jew, ad shelo heviashlish. So we'll say the case over here is where the Jew is going ahead and purchasing, let's say, a grain field from a non-Jew. And he purchased it before, the grain already started to grow, but had not yet reached one-third of its maturation. So what's the halacha? Then the Jew buys it, and the grain reaches one-third maturation under the ownership of the Jew, while the Jew owns it. So what's the halacha? Chayeves b'meiser shekvar nischayva. It becomes now obligated in Maiser. Why? So we'll say, even if what? Even if Maiser, the Jew then what? The Chazer Umachra Meshev Yishlish. So we'll say, you understand this case? The Jew bought the field from the non-Jew before the grain reached a third of its maturity. When the Jew bought it, under the Jewish ownership, it reached a third maturity. Even if the Jew subsequently resells it back to the Gentile, the halacha is what? That the grain is subject to Maiser. Why? Shekvar nischayva. Because we'll say, since the Gemara is actually teaching us another piece, which is quite interesting, which is that once grain reaches one-third of its maturation, on a technical level, it becomes chayiv in Maiser. Which we'll say, it's a little bit contradictory because we said before that really produce only becomes chayiv and meiser when there's miruach, once it's piled. But we're not going to really get into that contradiction right now. But for our purposes, once it goes ahead and achieves one-third of its maturation, so it's chayiv and meiser. And even if the Jew subsequently sells it back to the Gentile, it's still chayiv and meiser. So we'll say, so what do you see from that? Nischayva in, lo nischayva lo. Now the only reason why when the Jew sells it back to the Gentile, it's still chayv and meiser, is because it reached maturation under the ownership of the Jew. But what you can infer from this is what? Had the Gentile never sold the field to the Jew, what would be the halacha rabbi say? That the produce would not be chayiv in meiser. Which tells us that Gentile ownership of land in Eretz Yisrael does in fact remove the Kiddusha Sa'aretz for Trumos and Maestro's purposes. To which the Gemara says, no, what's the case over here? Hachamai Askinon, the Surya, oh, this is not taking place in Eretz Yisrael proper. Where is this taking a place? In Surya, Vikasavar, Kibush Yached, Loshme Kibush. And this opinion holds that when the king himself conquers land, that does not count as being part of Eretz Yisrael proper. So, also remember, what's Surya? Surya is literally Surya. Annexed by David HaMelech. David HaMelech went to war and he annexed. Now David HaMelech captured Surya. It was not a Melchemes Mitzvah. It was not an obligatory war. It was an annexation war. And he did so without first asking the Sanhedrin, which Rabbi said he was allowed to do. But because he went without asking the Sanhedrin, it wasn't called Klal Yisrael's war. It was called whose war? David's war, and there David annexed land, but that land, at least according to this opinion, never took on full Kiddushas Eretz Yisrael. Oh, so now what we're saying is that in Surya, which is only rabbinic holiness to begin with, if a Gentile owns that property, then what? Because we also remember, with halacha, the way we paskin is, that produce in Surya is subject to Trumos and Maisos midirabbanon, only rabbinically. Oh, so if a non-Jew owns property in Surya, then what's going to be the halacha? That since it's only rabbinically obligated to begin with, the property will be exempt, or the produce will be exempt from Trumos and Maisos. To which the Gemara says, Tashma, Yisrov al-Kham, Shalach, Kusad, Beshutfus. So there's another interesting case. Let's say Jew and non-Jew buy a piece of property. They own land together. And so the produce is jointly owned. So we'll say, so what's the halacha? Tevel v'chulin mu'urav in zeba, zeh devri Rebbe. Suppose it's very interesting. So Rebbe says, every single stalk is a mixture of tevel and chulin. Right? So we'll say, because remember again, the Jew's part is tevel, means the subject. When we say tevel, what does that mean? It means it's subject to chumos and maisos. So the Jew's part is subject to tithing, but the non-Jew's part is exempt. Rabbi Shimon Amiel Omer shall ovi kochavim pater v'shal yisal chayim. Rabbi Shimon Amiel says it's not true, but rather again when they separate out the produce, so the non-Jews' produce is exempt, the Jews' produce is chayiv. So once it reaches the Gemara, says Adkan lo pligi ella demar savar yesh breira umar savar ein breira. Ah, so Rabbi says, so what are they really arguing about over here? They're arguing about the Breira. See, Rabbi say, remember, Rebbe says, here's the problem with joint Jewish-Gentile-owned property, which is that every single stalk of grain has an intertwined partnership interest, which if you own that with another Jew, that's fine. That doesn't matter to us because their obligations are the same. The problem is when you own it with a Gentile, it means that the intertwined partnership interests mean that every single stalk of grain has tithing, needs to be tithed and is exempt. So let's say, so therefore again, the issue is, so according to, look at Rashi just one moment. Teva v'chulin mu'uravin, let me just read this to you. Ein l'cha kol chita v'chita shein chetzi teva v'chetzi chulin. Shechilek ovi kocham pater, v'af la'achar shechilku ha'tvua, ha'lokiach mina ovi kochavim tzarech la'aser, v'yisol tzarech la'aser, es shelo minei. So let's say, so listen to this. So the issue over here says, according to Rebbe, when you see, here's the fundamental machlokas. Both Rebbe and Rav Shimon Amiel agree that there's an intertwined partnership interest in every single stalk of wheat. What's the chilik between them? Rav Shimon Amiel subscribes to Breira. So let's say, if you owe Breira, then what's the halacha? That when the two partners divide up their produce, it becomes retroactively clarified that what? Mm-hmm. That the produce that the Gentile has is his, and the produce that the Jew has is his, which is good news, which means what? That if you buy from the Jew, then what? Then what? You have to take Shumas and Maestros. And if you buy from the Gentile, then what? You don't have to take Shumas and Maestros. Well, say, according to Rebbe, no matter who you buy from, you have to take Shumas and Maestros. Why? Because when the Jew and Gentile split up the produce, even in the Gentile's produce, there's still what? There's still the Jew's ownership interest. And therefore, again, you can't separate those out. So says the Gemara, even Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel are only arguing on what? Whether or not you subscribe to Breira. Ad kan lo pligi ela demar savi yishvira mar savi in Breira. about the kuli alma yesh kinyan leobik chav merit Israel laf kiyam yad meiser. Ah, but Rabbo said, what do you see from this machlokes? So Rabbi Moshem and Gamliel are arguing yesh breira ain't breira when the Jew and Gentile split up their partnership interest, the produce. So do we say that the Jew's produce is exclusively his, and the Gentile's produce is exclusively his, and their ownership interests are intertwined, yes or no? That's a machlokes. But what do you see, Clark? What do you see clearly? You see clearly that both agree that when a Gentile owns property in Eretz Yisrael, that that produce is not subject to Chumas and Maisos, because Gentile ownership of land in Eretz Israel has the ability to remove the Kedusha of the land. To which the Gemara says, not necessarily. Hacha Nami Bisuria. Oh, again, what are we talking about over here? This is not the classic Eretz Israel case of Osai. This is a Surya case. This is a Surya case. Vikasavar Kibush Yachod Lo Shmei Kibush. And Rabbi said, this particular opinion holds that individual annexation does not count as national annexation. And therefore, the mice again, we're talking once again about a case of what? Where property is in Surya. Therefore, it's only rabbinically obligated in Chumos and Maisos to begin with. And the mice again, everyone's going to agree that Gentile ownership of land in Surya will go ahead and remove the rabbinic obligation for tithing. But doesn't help us at all to understand what the halacha is in Eretz Yisrael proper. I'm going to give it Avin Tashma, Hamocher Sadeh Lo'ovi Kochavim, Lokeach Umevi Bikurim, Mipnei Tikkun Olam. So what's this? Let's look at our Mishnah. What did our Mishnah say? That if one sells his property to a Gentile, what did the Mishnah say? We make the Jew buy back the Bikurim from the Gentile and bring them up to Yerushalayim. Why? Mipnei Tikkun Olam. So what can you infer from here? Mipnei Tikkun Olam in Midarai Salo. See, Rabosai, Mipnei Tikkun Olam seems to sound like what? In reality, is this property subject to Bikurim? No. Why? Because when a Gentile purchases property from a Jew, he takes away the Kiddush of the land. But Mipnei Tikkun Olam, which is a rabbinic enactment, we're going to make the Jew buy back the quote-unquote technical, what would have been the first fruits had the Jew owned it and take it to Yerushalayim. So you see from here that what? The Gentile ownership of land in Eretz Yisrael does in fact remove the Kiddusha. No. Amar Rav Ashi. So the Gemara says, "Tikkun Olam in Midarai Salom." The only reason we make him buy back the land is because of Tikkun Olam, but not really because of a Daraisa. Not because there's any biblical obligation. In other words, that the land has not retained its kedusha. So he says, "No." Amar Rav Ashi, "Shtei Takaros." This is very interesting. There were two different Takaros. Meikara, Havi Maisi Midaraisa. So Rabbi said, in reality, when a Jew sells land to a Gentile, that land retains its Kiddusha. That land retains its Kiddusha. And therefore what? It's still subject to Trumos and Maestros and Bikurim. So what happened? In the beginning, Havu Maisi Midaraisa. So I'll say, in the beginning, when a Jew would sell land to a Gentile, so the Jew would understand that he still had an obligation to buy back the Bikurim, to bring them. Kevan de Kachazu de Kamikri Umizabni de Sabru Bikdushaisu Kaimon. Takinu luhu delo lesu. So I'll say, so what happened? So it posed a problem. Because when Jews saw that even once you sell land to a Gentile, you still have to bring the Bikurim, so they became more comfortable selling land to non-Jews. Why? Because, hey, if even by selling it to him, I'm not taking away from the Kiddusha of the land, right? The land still retains its Kiddusha. So what happens? So they felt more comfortable actually going ahead and selling land. So what happened? So the rabbi said, Takinu luhu delo lesu. So this is very interesting. So the rabbi, the first takana was that if you sell land to a non-Jew, you don't have to buy back the Bikurim. Now what were the rabbis trying to accomplish with that takana? They were trying to show the people that when you go ahead and you sell land to non-Jews, you are diminishing the Kiddusha of the land. So the hope was that that statement would be a deterrent against Jewish real estate transaction with Gentiles. Cave, I'm sorry?
Are they able to do that?
Because technically speaking, if you don't own the land, you don't have an obligation to bring Bikurim. On a very technical level, I only have a land, I have an obligation to bring Bikurim from my land. So on a technical level, there's no obligation. Just originally, people did it because they felt bad. The land is, so now they say, you don't have to bring it. Kevan dechazu demandalo sagile mezabin v'kamishtakin biyad ovdei kochavim. But when they saw that when some people became desperate, they were selling land to Gentiles. And now, I guess, in other words, it didn't work. it didn't work. There was, you know, sometimes you think you're going to teach someone a lesson. I'm going to show you, right, that when you sell your land, you're not going to have to bring bikurim. So the rabbis, for some reason, thought that would work. So it didn't. It didn't. And people, when they got, and again, so I want to be clear, the Gemara is clearly indicating people, in general, people only sell land as a last resort. It's not as true today, but certainly in agricultural society, you only sell your land, mamish, when you are at the end of your rope. So there were people, again, that were desperate, and in moments of desperation, they sold the land ultimately again to the Gentiles. And what happens? They come shtak miadol v'chavim. And now, not only did they sell the land, but what Rabbi say, there were no bikurim being brought. Therefore, hadr takinu luhu delesu. Therefore, the rabbis instituted again. That's what, that you have to bring the bikurim. And those Rabbi say, so the ma'isa again. The ma'isa, what the Gemara is suggesting, is that the Mishnah is not a proof, really, for the fact that that when you sell land to a non-Jew, the kiddusha of the land goes away. Because the Mishnah itself reflects, again, a two-tier takana. The original takana was, you don't bring bikurim. When that didn't work, ultimately, again, this is all in order to discourage Jewish sale of property to Gentiles in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, the second takana ultimately was, the land retains its kiddusha. Land retains its kiddusha. And because of that, in order that you realize that, you have to go ahead and buy back the bikurim from the Gentile and go ahead and bring them. I'm both saying, now the goal of this takana was, essentially, it makes it financially disadvantageous to sell land to a non-Jew. Because if you have to sell land to a non-Jew and you have to buy back the bikurim, every single, remember, who is the obligation to buy back the bikurim upon? Only upon the Jew who sold the land, which means that if the Gentile is a little bit of a businessman, what is he going to do? What is he going to do? He's going to gouge you. And he's going to gouge you. And by the way, you absolutely have no, you're going to have to pay whatever he wants you to pay. So this totally discourages Jewish sale of land to non-Jews, because at the end of the day, even if you get some money in the front end, you're going to be on the hook each and every year to buy back the bikurim. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Mevi Yukur, so Itmar, I'm sorry. Now the Gemara goes on and will say, so again, this machlokis between Rabba and Rabbi Lozer still stands. This machlokis is still there. So we'll say, so just to give you, the Rambam paskins in this case, just to give you a little bit of halacha. So the Rambam says, this is in Hilchos Trumos. Hilchos Trumos, Perek Aleph Halacha Tes. So the Perek Yud. Star Halacha Yud. So the Rambam paskins, Akum Shekona Karka Beret Yisrael, Lohifkia Mina Mitzvos. So we'll say, literally, the Rambam paskins that if a Gentile purchases land in Eretz Yisrael, he does not go ahead and remove the Kiddusha from the land. Elo harehi bikdushasa. Therefore, the land still retains its Kiddusha. Lefichach, so the Rambam goes on. So it says that the Rambam paskins. Rambam literally paskins like Rabba, that halokha lemais, again, land of Israel can't, and we'll say this, obviously, this has many ramifications, like we spoke about before for Shemitah, but the Shidas Rambam is, the Kiddusha of Eretz Yisrael does not go away even under Gentile ownership. Therefore, the mice, again, even if a Jew sells it, the land still retains its Kiddusha. Hence the understanding of the Takana of the Mishnah. Chazal understood that, again, the land still retains its Kiddusha. Therefore, if you sell the land, you have to buy back the Bikurim. Now the Gemara asks a follow-up question. Itmar, Hamocher, Sadeh Leperos. So it's an interesting case. If someone goes ahead and sells the field for Peros, meaning, let's say, I'm not selling the land, I'm selling the rights to the produce. So what's the halacha? Rabbi Yochanan Omer, maybe ukore. So we'll say Rabbi Yochanan paskins that in such a situation, so we'll say, this is not Jew Gentile, this is Jew and Jew. I purchase the rights to produce from Reuven. So now I get the fruit. So now I'm going to bring those first fruits to Yerushalayim. But so when you bring Bikurim, there are two parts. There's the bringing of the fruit and there's the recitation of the psukim. Can I recite the psukim if I don't own the land that the produce came from? So Rabbi Yochanan says, yes, you can bring the bikurim and you can read the psukim. Reish Lakish Amar, maybe the Inokor. Reish Lakish says, no, you can bring the psukim, but you can't. You can bring the bikurim, but you can't read the psukim. So why not? Rabbi Yochanan Amar, maybe the Kore. So Rabbi Yochanan says, I can bring the bikurim and I can do the recitation. Why? Because Kinyan Peros ke Kinyan Aguftami. Because Rabbi Yochanan Paskins Rabbi say that whoever owns the produce, it's as if he owns the land. Reish Lakish Amar maybe ve'eino kore. Reish Lakish on the other hand says that you can bring the Bikurim, but what? But you can't go ahead and read the Pesukim, do the recitation. Why not? Because Kinyan Aperos lav ki Kinyan Aguftami. Because it was Reish Lakish holds that when you own the produce, it is not as if you own it. So we'll say a yisodistic fundamental machlokes. Is Kinyan Aperos Kinyan Haguf or not? So we'll say, says the Gemara. So we'll say, actually, you know what we'll do is we'll stop over here for today. I'll put you, leave you on this cliffhanger. This fundamental machlokes, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, is Kinyan Aperos, is when you own the produce, is it like owning the actual Guf HaKarka? Rabbi Yochanan says yes. Reish Lakish says no. The nafkamina is if you own produce but not land, we have to bring Bikurim, but can you do the recitation? Rabbi Yochanan says yes. Reish Lakish ultimately says no.